White Rocket Entertainment.
The Auburn-Georgia War has been fought on 1,000 different battlefields across the South. It has divided brother against brother. In some players' cases, it was the greatest experience of their lives, and they'd never forget it. The Georgia coach from Moultrie, who couldn't beat the poultry, and was summarily dismissed after 1995. The coach from Division I AA, who went to Georgia saying he was the right choice when he was actually the second choice. The little man, son of the Florida State coach, who led the Tigers to multiple wins in the series, improbable as they might have been. The Auburn star player who ended up becoming one of the greatest coaches in the history of Georgia, winning multiple games in the rivalry there. And then there was the rough man from Blythe, Georgia, who crossed over the state line, learned under a bear, and became one of the greatest coaches the rivalry has ever known. Any understanding of Auburn football has to begin with the Georgia rivalry. The Iron Bowl is what it is, but it didn't even take place for decades. And it's more about class warfare and pure hatred anyway. But the Auburn-Georgia rivalry defined us for who we are and opened us up to who we became, good and bad. It's a more stately affair, with somewhat equal measures of respect on each side. It is in many ways the crossroads of both programs, and it's a hell of a crossroads. This is the Auburn-Georgia rivalry. The Deep South's oldest rivalry, going back to February 20th, 1892, a game in Atlanta won by the Tigers 10-0. It is a rivalry currently separated by only one game, 56-55-8, to the favor of the Bulldogs. An Auburn win on Saturday will even the series, a series that will have lasted as of this weekend 120 games. Only world wars have interrupted the series. It is the fifth most played series in college football. As Pat Dye said, it's a unique thing. It's like playing against your brother. I don't think anybody who plays in that game can ever forget it. It just doesn't matter much where it's played or what somebody's record is. It's so intense and tough, but at the same time, it's family. This, then, is the Deep South's oldest rivalry. It's renewed once again on Saturday, as the Auburn Tigers prepare to make a run for the SEC championship. It's seen a miracle pass that changed out both participants in the 2002 SEC championship game, and it's seen
a miracle in dirt hair! A miracle in dirt hair!
What new script will be written this weekend? The past is prologue. History awaits.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
We welcome you to Denton Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Yo, yo, yo. Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we took our fleet to the Death Star, and we discovered that perhaps Admiral Ackbar was right when he warned us last week.
It's a trap!
Because we nearly stepped in the trap, but we got bailed out by that little quarterback, that scrappy kid. And we are now on a 6-game winning streak. We got 7 wins overall, and we are ranked today number 8 in both of the voting type polls. So what do you think?
A win is a win.
Yep.
One of the lesser satisfying wins of Auburn history.
Yeah.
You did play the Admiral Ackbar sand last week and asked me if it was a trap, and I said no, and I was wrong. And here's why I was wrong. It was the perfect trap because
it was so perfect that you didn't even see it coming. It was so
that
perfect.
I didn't see it, and that's why it was a good trap.
Yeah.
We were coming off the high of the Ole Miss game, and remember how the players celebrated after that game? What a big win that was! We have Georgia on the horizon.
Yep.
We had Vanderbilt in between. Yep. And Vanderbilt not only had a week off, but had a cupcake game before that.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically had 3 weeks to get ready for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a team with, you know, a very good defense to begin with and 3 weeks to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went into the game with a bunch of injuries and missing a bunch of key players.
Which we didn't fully appreciate during the last week or during the week.
We knew
we were banged up a little bit, but not to the degree that we actually were.
No. And so when you combine, you know, the injuries with a well-prepared, well-coached opponent, mm-hmm, and the 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot home curse,
mm-hmm,
which is easily the worst time slot Auburn – when Auburn plays in that time slot, they play their worst games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a historical fact. And, you know, the letdown, look ahead, Ole Miss Georgia sandwich, and Vanderbilt being well prepared, and us being without key players,
and a near 2014 Texas A&M level series of unfortunate events in the fourth quarter.
Yes, a complete insane cascading of events in the fourth quarter, and, you know, a bunch of terrible officiating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of stuff in there really did combine to make a game that was much closer and uglier than it needed to be.
And I'll say this, that win means that in the history of Auburn Vanderbilt games in that series, we are now tied with them. And though my instinct is to play, I think that probably what's more appropriate is,
please clap.
Yeah,
amen.
You know.
Amen.
So you asked the question then, and I'm thinking about it. Have you felt worse following an Auburn win? Emphasis on win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing I really feel bad about is Petway. Because, you know, and this is my tweet that has blown up the last 24 hours is where I said, "Dear football gods, please heal Cameron Petway's leg so that I may see him hang 300 yards on Georgia. Amen." And that's been a very popular tweet because people wanted to see that. People,
mm-hmm,
wanted to see him just eviscerate and, of course, tenderize the Bulldogs. So part of it is knowing what we may not get to see, and part of it is wondering what we'll do against them without that, you know.
Yes, more that for me.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it's the one now because we're kind of coming off that high of we're going to finally beat Georgia. But then as you think more and more about it, you think, are we going to beat Georgia? Where are we going to get the rushing from? I mean, you know, if Kerryon can grind out 80 yards or something, are we going to is it going to be the Stanton Truitt show? Is it going to be the Cam Baylor guy? Cam
Martin.
Martin show. I mean, where's the rushing yards going to – is it going to be Eli Stove making that thing work? I mean, I honestly feel like people – the reason I – one of the main reasons I did that segment at the beginning of the show that you guys just heard, John hasn't heard it yet. We're back to the old days where John doesn't hear everything until after the show is done because of the technological changes we've had to make. But one of the main reasons I did that was to emphasize just how important the Georgia series is. We're going to talk about Vanderbilt some more, but I just want to emphasize this. The Georgia series is so important, and I feel like people are trying to take that game for granted, John.
Mm.
I don't think we can take that game for granted any more than we should have taken Vanderbilt.
No. No, no, no. Mm-mm. We should not take it for granted to the point that you made an excellent point earlier today where I don't want to hear any talk about Auburn versus Alabama.
No, gosh, no.
This is Georgia week, and like if we have any questions later that relate to Auburn playing Alabama, we're going to put them on the back burner because right. So this is all about Georgia, and we need to be focused on Georgia and beating them.
About 6 o'clock on Saturday. I just want to hear the UGA announcers once again proclaiming,
"Oh my God!"
Just like they did 3 years ago, because we haven't beaten Georgia in Athens since 2005, since Brandon Cox threw that long pass to Aromashadu, I think, and
fumbled into the end zone.
Fumbled in the end zone, and then we kicked the field goal. John Vaughn, I guess, yeah, kicked the field goal. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot. I think we've only played them 4 times in Athens since then because we did the change up of years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we lost all 4. Richt had a hex on us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only 2 teams out of the last 10 years. The only 2 teams out of the last 10 years that beat Georgia went on to win the SEC championship. That's what caliber of an Auburn team it's taken to win that game the last decade. So, and in fact, you know, the 05 team really should have been in the SEC championship game. The 04 team won the SEC championship. The last time we beat Georgia that we weren't even of that caliber was 2001. And this is 2016, okay? The last time an SEC champion caliber Auburn team, the last time a non-SEC champion caliber Auburn team beat Georgia in Athens or anywhere, really, was 2001, but that one was in Athens. So it's been a while, and this is a golden, golden opportunity, and we cannot, because weird things happen. But see, you and I, we're getting off on this Georgia thing. Let's have a little bit more talk about Vanderbilt before we get into Georgia. Yeah. So,
all right.
So we haven't felt worse after a win? I don't know.
I'm trying to think of one. I mean, was there maybe another win where we had a big injury in it? But
yeah, maybe so.
This is short-term memory. Jacksonville State.
That may be it. Yeah, or that Utah State game where we had to kick the onside kick in the last.
I was at that game. Good golly!
Oh Lord!
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law were here, and they were just like, "I'm sorry, man," like giving me condolences, like my dog got run over in the yard, you know. "I'm sorry, man. Oh, it's tough." And then we pulled that out, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, this is what it's like being an Auburn fan—the good and the bad." All right, so we know that Petway. We don't really know what's wrong with him, but it looked like something you don't get over. Unless it was a cramp, right? And I don't think it was a cramp, or they would have said so. You know, Gus said he pulled something. That doesn't, to me, look like something you feel immediately better and get right back out there and are going 200 yards rushing. Do you?
I don't know. We got to hope we hear something else during the week. I mean, supposedly he was standing around after the game, like standing up and smiling and stuff. So I don't know.
You know what it reminded me of was the World Cup last time when we had I can't think of his name. We had the really good forward, the big, strong, heavy set guy that was a good forward. And in that game that was like 150 degrees in the jungle of Brazil, he went running down the field, down the pitch to score. And he did exactly what Petway did. He just all of a sudden, like he got shot by a sniper, you know, he all of a sudden held up and just fell over. So when I saw him do that, I was thinking, oh, because we lost that player for several games at the World Cup when that happened. He didn't come right back from it. So makes me just I just hate it because he's having such a good – at least he got his 1,000 yards.
Yeah, but and you know, if he is banged up, then we can hold him up for this game in Alabama A&M and hopefully have him back for the Iron Bowl. So.
Yeah, that's right. If we can get through – if we can get past Georgia without him, then we will see what happens. But it also made me think about the 2002 Georgia game where we went into it with Ronnie Brown as our only running back. I remember he and the fullback both got hurt during the game. That's how come we ended up going into the Iron Bowl in 2002 with Trey Smith at tailback and some tight end playing fullback, and we still beat him. So it happens. It's just like they said, I mean, it's tough to get this far in the season and not have half the players, if not all of them, banged up.
And I want to talk about the other injuries, too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going
to say. Trey Williams didn't play in this game,
right?
And he's really been a leader of the defense. And then Deshaun Davis got ejected for targeting. And so we were really missing the two linebackers who had played, you know, 75% of the snaps this year and were the real leaders in that group. Another guy that hasn't played in a couple of games, and are you sitting down? Hey, we've been missing another player in this team, and I never, ever thought I would say this. Like 6 months ago, I never thought I would say this. This team really misses Tony Stevens.
Yeah, that's true.
He
was kind of our possession guy.
He was kind of Sean's security blanket a little bit.
Right.
And he didn't play against Ole Miss and didn't play this game, and the offense doesn't click at the same level without him.
Yeah.
And I don't trust, you know, Marcus Davis and Jason Smith.
No.
But so we need him back.
And the freshmen don't seem to be in a big hurry to seize the day, you know. I mean, they're clearly they're very talented and they do different things, but they're not out there making every other play, you know. Especially without Tony Stevens, we just don't have it. I mean, it's been a while when we've had a decent to good Auburn team without at least one or two, you know, go-to receivers. We had Darwin Adams, right? And and T-Zack there on 09 and 10 and into 11. And we had Benton in 2011 from Texas.
Emory Blake.
Yeah. And I always had trouble with his name for some reason. Emory Blake was kind of our go-to guy there for a while. And then we've had, you know, the one that went to the Steelers in 13.
Coates.
Yeah, Sammy Coates. And we had
Ricardo.
And Duke. And so we've always had at least that one, if not two. And on the national championship team, we really had about four pretty solid receivers. You know, we had we had Cody, we had Blake, and we had the two stars on the outside. So it's been a while since we've been this short of anybody who wanted to step up and be the man at receiver. And when we finally got somebody sort of halfway doing it, you're right, he goes out. So we really are, as Gus said, a banged up football team. The miracle is that none of them banged up, knock on wood, everybody, has been Carl Lawson.
I mean, we've been very fortunate on both lines, I think, so far. We just need to keep that up. So
right. So I guess who do you think the running backs are going to be next week?
I think it's going to be Carry On and Truitt if he doesn't play. So
yeah. Well, you had a note about the TV announcers. I was not thrilled. This is one of the rare times I actually turned the audio completely off and turned on the Auburn network on my phone and ran it through my Bluetooth speakers. I had to actually slow the game down a few seconds to catch up to the audio, or to get the audio to catch up to the game. But it was worth it because I would much rather hear our guys than those two knuckleheads.
Oh, God, like, an analyst was terrible. Yeah. It was painful listening to him. It was, like, I'm not one of those people that gets hung up on TV announcers, like, good or bad.
Right.
But that guy was awful. Just would not let the fumble thing go, would not let the targeting thing go. And he would just, like, beat a dead horse and then come back around and beat it some more.
Absolutely. Absolutely terrible. I couldn't stand it. So, yeah, for those that don't know, you can get TuneIn Radio and get the Auburn Network on there for free. And I just ran it through my big Bluetooth speaker in front of the television, and it was great. I had, like, it was like Stan and Rod were right there, you know, doing the TV broadcast. So you had to kind of pause the TV for about 4 seconds to get it synced up, but after that it was great. So you say overall play.
I mean, just overall, Auburn played one of our worst games of the year, I think, on both sides of the ball. Like, you know, defense wasn't as good. Offense wasn't as good.
We even didn't make a field goal, although for certain reasons, but still.
Yeah.
Only the second one all year.
So, yeah, I mean, even the special teams had setbacks. It was a win, but it was a disappointing win. So.
Well, in the meantime, talking about the field goals, I wanted to point out Daniel Carlson on Saturday set Auburn's career field goal record in terms of number of made field goals. Carlson has made 61, surpassing old Wesley B.O.S. Byram. For those of you back in 2007, you may remember why we call him B.O.S. I can't say it on the air. Involves Florida. He is 20 for 22 this year, and the two he missed, he didn't miss, they were blocked. He's 132 for 132 on extra points. I'm now knocking on the wood of the cabinet behind me. He is now second all-time on the scoring list, by Auburn's entire career scoring list. He just passed John Vaughn, who had 312, and he's now trailing Wesley Byram, who had 363 points over, I guess, 4 years of being our kicker. Because he was, yeah, Byram was our kicker for four straight years, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
His very last kick was the best one of all, of course. But he had some pretty darn good ones the first year, too, beating Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to Carlson. And he's got another year if he wants to catch up to Byram. I don't know. Does he go pro? What do kickers do in a situation like that?
Well, it's weird. The guy that was Florida State's great kicker the last couple of years, Roberto Aguayo, went pro, and Tampa Bay took him in the second round.
Wow.
Now, he's been a bit of a disaster in the pros. Like, he had kind of a meltdown in training camp, and he couldn't make anything. So
wow.
I don't think that would happen to Carlson, but it's kind of a cautionary tale. I don't think NFL teams are going to be rushing out to draft kickers, but I don't know. I mean, I know you don't watch the NFL. They did this thing where they moved the extra point back.
Yeah.
So it's a much tougher kick now. It's like kicking a 30-yard field goal, basically.
Yeah.
And so they're not automatic anymore. They're not chip shots anymore.
Oh, wow.
They require skill, and they miss a lot of them.
Oh, wow.
And so that's a reason that Carlson would be really valuable.
I had no idea. That's hilarious. Well, mm-hmm. You know, picking a kicker in your second round of the draft sounds like something I did in the fantasy football league with you guys about 1990. So I can't I can't criticize him there. That's you know, I've done that too. What about Sean White's injury? And this is the thing, by the way, that's been annoying me. Is it's like the media wants to turn that into a conspiracy theory. Have you been seeing any of this? You don't track.
I've seen people. I stay away from some of that stuff. You know,
you're smart.
The dark web of Auburn discussions. I don't know. I believe it. I'm sure some people think he was suspended or something like for the first half.
Oh, he's doing drugs again, John. He's been busted for drugs once this year. That's what I kept hearing from people. I'm like, come on. You know, I mean, we know he was hurt. In fact, I tweeted a while ago that one of the SEC country reporters, his headline was something about or the story started out with something about Sean White's quote injury unquote. I'm like, come on, injury quote unquote, like it's a fake, like it's a made up story. We saw him get hurt in the Ole Miss game. We saw Rhett come out on the field and, you know, point to his shoulder and say, "Are you okay?" and everything. We know that that happened. He didn't practice this week. These people are sick. It's just they need to just chill out and stop trying to find a, you know, they've got their tin foil on their heads, you know? Ugh.
Gosh. And I think the what they would say is, well, he came out and looked fine in the second half, but I think part of it was, I mean, he doesn't need a ton of practice at this stage of the season to play okay. No. And also because I'm sure they gave him like a shot to deaden all the pain in his shoulder. Oh, so.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of the quarterbacks in the Vanderbilt game, in the first half we had John Franklin III in. And that was about as fast. You could tell that's what they were practicing all week, couldn't you? Because we went faster on offense in that first half than our offense has gone in years. We were Oregon speed there for a little while.
It was as fast as I've ever seen it at Auburn.
Yes, they were rolling. And, you know, and that's funny because I've said all along that JF3 to me looks like more of a prototypical Oregon quarterback than an Auburn quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but it just seems like usually the prototypical Gus quarterback is a little bigger and stronger and heavier and can power, you know. Even Nick was pretty built, you know. Whereas the wiry, super fast guy that can sling it, he reminds me of the Oregon's quarterback when we played him.
Darren Thomas,
yeah, a little bit more like him. So I was excited. I liked coming out and going ludicrous speed, going Oregon speed there. What did you think about that?
I liked the pace, and I thought he played okay. We only ran about four or five plays with him. You know what I'm saying, though?
Right.
It was kind of the same thing over and over, and I feel like after a while, Vanderbilt is a well-coached defensive team, and they kind of adjusted to it, and then we weren't getting anything.
Right.
Yeah. And I think part of it was we need to, you know, if we're going to play him, we need to let loose the full playbook a little bit. But I thought he was okay. I thought he did what he could do. I think this should eliminate any of those, you know, JF3 is the better quarterback truthers that are still out there.
That's a good way to put it. I like that. Well, look, there's two things, okay? There's why was he the starter if Sean couldn't go, and there's once he's playing, what do you do with him? Okay, here's the thing. He was the starter because they named him the backup. They named him the backup because they don't want Jeremy Johnson playing. Okay, and because they wanted Franklin to be getting lots of reps and lots of practice so that he could grow into being a real, dependable, multifaceted Auburn quarterback. He's not that yet, but you make him the backup and you hope you don't need him except in mop-up so he can learn. Now, here's the problem. When Sean actually gets hurt, you have to start Franklin. Why? Because he's the backup. You can't jump over the backup and put the third string guy in as the starter. That doesn't make any sense. If that's the case, why is this your backup, right? So I feel like they were kind of trapped in this situation where they made him the backup for good reasons, but once you make him the backup, he's the second string quarterback. He has to be the guy to start if the starter can't go, right?
I don't think that was a trap at all, because I feel like he's the second best quarterback on the team.
Do you really? That's debatable, I think. That's the thing right now. It's just debatable.
Well, I'm sorry. I would not play Jeremy Johnson in a game in a college football game that matters.
Okay.
I said that whatever game that was.
Clemson,
whatever game that was. Like, it is football malpractice. and I'll sue. I love Jeremy and I hope he has a long and happy life, but you can't do it. I don't trust him.
Okay. Well, the second part of it is, what do you do with JF3? And I agree, if you're going to have him in there, you've got to try to run at least most of your offense, because you are putting him behind the eight ball when you put him out there with three or four plays and everybody knows what he's going to do. And especially if you do let him pass, you only let him pass in obvious passing situations, right? I mean, I think that the design of the play is you put him in a passing situation and you tell him roll out, look for the pass, and if it's not blatantly wide open, you run.
Yes.
But Vanderbilt was looking for that. They were daring him to pass, right? They were totally stacked against the run and daring him to pass. And he did try a couple of times, and it was not a very good
But result. We needed to do things like, you know, play action pass on first down.
Yes.
With him, not wait till it was third and eight or whatever.
Exactly.
So I mean, Vanderbilt is good on defense. They have good linebackers, and you know, they're well coached on this kind of stuff. And after a while, you had to do some different things, and we just weren't doing it. So,
and I just go ahead.
I was just going to say, but part of it was also this larger thing I was talking about, where the team as a whole didn't play as well as we did, you know, in the last three games. Like, we just, the overall level play, the blocking, the tackling, everything wasn't as good.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you is Vanderbilt. I mean, I don't know how much of that was us being blah and how much of that was Vanderbilt just playing really well. I feel like if Vanderbilt had played all season at the level they played against us, they'd have a lot better record.
They
could have won the East.
Well, they could have won the East. But, I mean, but you go back and look, every game they lost, the only game they got killed in was at Georgia Tech, which is a weird offense, and it happens there. But, I mean, every other game, like, they were in, it was like a one-touchdown game.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they beat Georgia, they lost to Florida, it was whatever, like 13-10, that kind of stuff. So, all the other games they lost were close games. They're a good defense. I mean, he does a good job on defense, and they have good players. But I also think, like, you know, if Petway's healthy and Sean's healthy and Sean starts the whole game, we beat them by 20 points, and we're not even having this conversation. So,
well, and as we were pointing out on Saturday afternoon, if Petway doesn't blow out a tire running for the end zone, it's 30-16 there?
Mm-hmm.
And the game is over.
That's right.
I mean, the only reason it was ever even in doubt was that he hurt himself untouched. If he had gotten in the end zone and then fallen over in pain, we win the game by double digits and it's not even close.
Yes.
So that,
the whole end sequence doesn't matter.
Right. Let's walk through it. He's running for the end zone. He's going to, you know, in with like 200 yards rushing, and it's going to be 30-16 at that point, and we're up 14 points. Instead, because they tackle him, we end up having to settle, and they don't tackle him. He falls down, and they tackle him. Because of his injury, we have to settle for attempting a field goal. Well, we attempt a field goal, and it is blocked by that insane play that what Cunningham makes.
Yes, which, again, like,
I think he did it legit.
I mean, he didn't touch anybody. I know the rule is you can't jump on the center's back and block the kick like that. But I thought the rule was you weren't allowed to jump over the center. And, like, his feet were over the guard, but the rest of his body was over the center.
He was definitely over the center.
So if the rule is you can't jump over the center, he broke the rule. But, you know, it was an amazing play.
Well, the timing was perfect, and the move was perfect.
And everybody's all like, well, you got to worry about the snap and stuff. But the reality, you can't do that because kickers have these ritual kind of things where they, when they get set up, they take, you know, steps back and to the side to get themselves lined up, and then they signal when they're ready, and that's when the guy snaps it. And so the defense can watch that signal, and so they can time it, and he just did a great job timing it just right. Now, he almost was offsides too.
Yeah,
he was in the air when the ball was snapped.
Yeah, his quote was he thought he detected a cadence from our center and knew the split second to jump, And watching the replay a couple of times, I'm like, dang, you know what? I think he did. I think he had it right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd love to say, oh, no. I mean, you guys know me. I'd be all over him if he was a split second early. But I'm like, you know, I got to respect that. That was just him making a play. And
yeah,
you know,
sometimes.
And he sometimes didn't
get, go ahead.
I just say he was the kid that wanted revenge on Auburn for how he was recruited or whatever before Gus. And, you know, he didn't win the game, but at least he got that play, and he can take that to his retirement days going, you know, I stuffed that kick on their great kicker. And that's fine. So he got that. But let's finish out the sequence. So we block the kick. So they get the ball back. Now we put them in like 3rd and 20 or something, 3rd and 15, and we've got them stopped. We stop them there. The game is over again. And we almost get a reverse miracle at Jordan-Hare. You know, where
fourth and 18.
There you go. I knew it was atrocious. 4th and 18, and they get the double. I'm just glad that Matthews, Trigger Trey, was not involved. Oh my gosh!
I didn't even think about that.
Can you imagine if one of those guys had been him?
Oh.
If I was him, I just would retire from football at that point. I'd be like, I'm clearly not meant for this sport. I got to go. And they get the completion. They get the first down. And so they're still going. And it takes Holsey stepping up and getting another game-saving interception 2 weeks in a row. I mean, that broke the streak because they had a streak going of just luck from above, you know. The miracle. How many times is the running back going to just go down untouched 20 yards from the end zone? Okay. What are the odds that happens? And then what are the odds that you jump over and block a field goal at that split second without touching anybody? And then what are the odds that two defensive players deflect the ball into your hands for the first down? I mean, that's three plays more or less in a row. Bang, bang, bang. Each one of them is like 1,000,000 to 1, and they got all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
The only thing I could criticize Auburn for is after Pettway goes down, you know, we have the ball at the 12-yard line. And I think we got a little bit conservative. Now, I understand it because we were also trying to run the clock. You know, we didn't want to throw the ball here because we're up 23-16 and we want to run the clock and end up either scoring or getting a field goal. Right. So, you know, we ran Kerryon up the middle, no gain. We ran Eli Stover on the end, he lost a yard. And then we ran Kerryon around the end and he lost 5 yards. Yeah. So, you know, I get why we did that. We were trying to milk the clock. I mean, we made, you know, I think they called timeout in between those plays. But, you know, if they had timeouts and they were going to use them, then maybe we should have done a play-action pass to try to score and end it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, particularly since you got Sean out there anyway. You might as well have had, JF3 out there for that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least maybe he could have turned the corner and run for a touchdown or something.
It did force them to use the timeouts, which, you know, ended up being useful in that where they didn't have any timeouts on that last drive. So.
Well, in both halves, we ran their timeouts out really quickly, mm-hmm. It seemed like. So that worked out pretty well. The officiating.
Mm.
Man, I mean, I can't remember a game where I was that mad at the officials the whole way through. Just constantly.
I mean, they reversed the Pettway fumble, which was the right call, even though the TV guy is never going to let that go.
It was his butt was on the ground.
It was on the ground. Jay Tate tweeted a great picture of it from the side where you can see his rear end is completely on the ground and he still has the ball right in his hand. Because he was at field level taking the picture from behind Pettway. And that was one. But there was a lot of other plays. Lawson got held. On the play on the Eli Stove tackle where he lost a yard before they blocked the field goal, there was a very obvious face mask, mm-hmm. where the guy kind of pulled Stove's helmet off from the front and the back.
Yeah, he pulled it clean off. Exactly. They didn't call it.
I'm like, how does this helmet come off with the defender holding it if there wasn't a face mask?
Oh, Lord.
And there was a few other plays like that where I was like,
Well, they never called Vanderbilt for holding. They called us for holding every other play.
Yes.
I mean, we had to overcome like three holds in a row on one series, and we still didn't. Mm.
No, but they, I mean, they were all over some of our defensive linemen in that game. They did not turn into one of the SEC's best offensive lines overnight.
No.
You know, I think they were letting them get away with a lot in terms of our defensive line. That was very frustrating. Yeah. So.
Well, let's turn our attention to Georgia a little bit. We've already established how big and important this game is. We talked about that a good bit. We talked about how we're going to have to make do with injuries. I mean, there's we talk about 2002. There's rarely ever been a game we've gone into a big rivalry game with more key offensive skill position players injured, you know, since was the Alabama game in 2002. That's kind of how I feel here. It's a game we have every chance to win if we can just find a way to generate a rushing game and if Sean can hold his arm together for four quarters. What can you tell us, other than we know they've got two or three really good running backs, what can you tell us about the Georgia offense?
I mean, they have this freshman quarterback, Eason, mm-hmm. and he's good, but he's not great. I mean, again, he's a true freshman.
Right.
And he's had a very up and down kind of season. He doesn't, you know, he has a very strong arm, but, you know, if you're going to have to put the game on his shoulders or whatever, he doesn't really, really scare me. You know, like he had a good game against Kentucky last week. But before that, you know, he was really not good against Florida. You know, he was terrible when they played South Carolina. So I think he had, you know, if you give, he's one of those guys, if you give him a lot of time, then I think he can do things. I think the big thing that Auburn has against the Georgia offense is their offensive line isn't very good. And so I think we can get pressure on him and stuff their running backs in the backfield. You know, they have Chubb and Sony Michelle, but Chubb's been banged up all year and not been himself. And, you know, Michelle did most of the carries against Kentucky the other night. Chubb's only averaging like 4.7 yards per carry,
right,
which for him is, you know, a career low.
Right.
So, you know, again, Florida's defense, I think, is comparable to Auburn's defense, and Florida really shut them down offensively. They don't have a lot of big receivers. They have that one little bitty receiver. It's like the trick play guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, they've got Godwin that the AL.com people are still deciding if he's going to come to Auburn or not.
You're killing me. The little bitty guy, McKenzie,
yeah.
Isaiah McKenzie. That's the one guy on their, you know, Godwin's a bigger, more, I mean, he's Tony Stevens-ish, I would say.
Yeah.
McKenzie's the little bitty guy. They call him, you know, with the ball, was very shifty with the ball. He's the guy that scares me a little bit. With some of these little short passes that Auburn's been giving up lately, if they can get him matched up against a linebacker or somebody right a little slant right across the middle, he can give us some problems there. But I think, you know, Georgia's – the offensive coordinator for Georgia is the guy who was at Arkansas a couple years ago, mm-hmm. who we liked there, but he's – you know, their offense has not been good this year. I think we can confuse the young quarterback. I think we can get in his head. I think we can get pressure on him and make him rush and make bad decisions. And I think we can stop their run.
Well, look, we made Chad Kelly look like Jim Kelly. We made
Shermer.
We made Shermer look like Joe Montana. Are we going to make Eason look like Tony Eason? And for those of you out there that don't know, that was the Patriots quarterback that was like a first-round draft pick. But his dad, by the way.
I sure hope not. And I don't think we will. I mean, again, he's a freshman, you know, and I think we can get pressure on him and make him uncomfortable, and I think we can do some things with coverage and the pass rush that make him uncomfortable and mess with him a little bit. And I think we can cause problems for him. Now, again – the short passing thing was a problem again. Yeah, I think Vanderbilt watched the Ole Miss game and spent all week,
you know, working on those things they thought would work against Auburn. And I'm sure Georgia's going to go back and do that, you know, the same thing. But they kind of are what they are at this point offensively.
If this was still a Mark Richt team, Eason would be throwing a inside slant every play. Mm-hmm. And they would be getting 15 yards a pass every play on us for four quarters, because that's what Richt used to do. And that's what we've never been very good at stopping.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that. So
good. What about the defense?
I mean, the defense has taken a step back, too. I mean, it's not the same now. I mean, because, you know, Pruitt's gone, and they got Kirby Smart's the head coach, and they got Mel Tucker, who was at Alabama, as the defensive coordinator. The defense is solid, but it's not great. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why I wanted to see what Petway could do against them. I just want to cry thinking of what we may not get to see. I wanted to see Petway roll up and down the field on that Georgia defense, and I'm so disappointed.
I mean, they haven't played a lot. The best offensive team they played was Ole Miss when they played at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss beat them 45-14.
Yeah.
You know, North Carolina is pretty good. That was the first game of the season in Georgia Dome. That was kind of weird. But other than that, I mean, it's the East. That the rest of the offenses are terrible. They played Kentucky the other night, and I watched a good bit of that game, flipping over from the Alabama game. And, you know, Kentucky was running basically a high school offense against them, where they had this freshman guy in like a single wing kind of quarterback offense, just keeping the ball and running it against them, like the same play like 10 or 20 times in a row, and Georgia couldn't stop it. So I really feel like, you know, we'll be able to run the ball on them. And if Sean's healthy, you know, we'll mix it up, we'll play action, we'll be okay against them. I think, you know, Florida's offense is terrible, and they scored 24 against Georgia. South Carolina's mediocre. I mean, they move the ball on them pretty well. I just think, like, with our offense, even if Petway doesn't play, I feel like we're going to be able to move the ball on Georgia's score points. Now, my thing is, go back to, if Sean's healthy and Petway's not, this is the game to open it up and throw the ball more. Go at him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they don't have the same, you know, there's been some Georgia defenses that had, you know, a ton of talent and a ton of first-round draft picks on it. And this isn't one of those teams, you know? Yeah. I mean, Missouri passed for 376 yards against them. Ole Miss passed for 330, you know. And you remember the second half of the Tennessee game, how he lit them up. So it can be – yeah, they're vulnerable that way, I think.
I hope that Sean will be able to play either because of his injury – or for whatever the conspiracy theorists are saying. Now, I'm not going to pass along scurrilous rumors. I will not say anything about what people are saying. I am not going to say a word about what I'm hearing on the dark side of
smoke weed every day
of people talking about Sean, because that would be wrong. So I'm not going to say anything. We'll move along. So what do you expect to happen overall against Georgia?
Well, I mean, I do expect us to get Georgia's best effort. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. Absolutely. And this is one of those games, man. This is one of those rivalries where weird stuff happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're at home. You know, it's do they play Tech at home, or is this their last home game?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
No, they have other home games. I was going to say, is it like Chubb's last home game? That would worry me.
You know, in the old days, this was always the next to last game we both played, but we've both started adding games in there. We added one. They may have two.
No, they have one and then Tech after
one
this.
One and then so. Tech. Okay, yeah.
So, I think they're going to play. I think Georgia's going to be fired up, and I think they're going to come out and, you know, with the crowd and everything, and try and take control of the game in the first few minutes. So there's going to be kind of that furious rush, like we saw 2 years ago, where Georgia tries to come out at the beginning of the game and use the ride of the crowd and the you know, like a big kickoff return or something else to kind of take it to us. Yeah. But we just have to get through that part and then execute. And I don't think Georgia can move the ball consistently against our defense. I think their offensive line is just not very good, and I think our defensive line is going to give them a lot of problems. I think this is a Montrevious Adams game. This is a Carl Lawson game. I think they're both from Georgia, mm-hmm. and I think this is their game to go over there and show those guys what they got. And I think they're going to kind of take over. And I think, you know, Sean will be healthy. This is the game. Maybe if Pettway doesn't play, open it up and Sean have a big game passing. That's what I'm looking for.
That would be great. And I'll just remind folks, before 2007, going over to Clark County was almost a guaranteed win for Auburn. Auburn won, I will count backwards here for the modern era. Auburn won, off the top of my head, Auburn won in Athens in 05, 01, 99, 97, 95, 93, 89, 87, 85, 83. Okay, so I feel pretty good about our chances playing in our home away from home in Athens. Let me see here. It's almost time for listener questions, but I have to point out, we've gotten a little response back on this, and so I want to remind people one more time. It's November the 6th as we are recording this. We're doing it a little bit early this week on Sunday night. And, Christmas is coming up, so make sure you get your Christmas gift shopping taken care of, including the three fine Auburn football books from White Rocket Entertainment, and that would be Season of Our Dreams, Decades of Dominance, and Lorindo. And, any of them are available. I mean, we can figure out a way to sign them for people if they want that. Or you can just go to Amazon or to a bookstore in Auburn and pick them up. But, yeah, you can just go on Amazon.com if you don't live anywhere near Auburn and aren't going to be there in the next couple of weeks. And or just drop us an email or a message on Twitter and ask us about any kind of special thing that you want done, and we'll surely figure out a way to do it. So make sure you pick up one of those, if not all three. In fact, the whole little set, they're all the same size. They make a nice little box set to give away for Christmas. So shall we ask Mira to hit the button here?
Hit the button.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
If we're going to have to be doing it through a speaker, I'm just going to have to get a better speaker because my speaker is getting kind of ratty. What we got from the old mailbag this week?
All right, we got some good ones. The first one, it's an interesting question we wanted to talk about. It's from J.W. Rice. And he was talking about the Cubs fans rolling Toomer's corner, and he says,
yeah.
When do you think it's acceptable, not acceptable for rolling?
This is a good question I did want to touch on very briefly. I'm a purist when it comes to rolling the corner, and I was not thrilled the first time Toomer's corner may have been rolled for other things than Auburn wins, and I just don't know about it before 1991. But the first time I was ever aware that Toomer's corner was rolled for something that wasn't Auburn was when the Braves went to the World Series in 1991 for the first time in forever. They rolled Toomer's corner. So is that the first time you know of?
It's probably happened other than that, but
can't remember really. Now, people were saying for the Cubs, it was really for the Auburn player on the Cubs. And if so, that's okay. That's a little better. But I'm just not thrilled with rolling it because you're happy about something.
What if it's not Auburn team sports related, but it's Auburn related? Like something else good happens at Auburn.
No, if it's Auburn related, yeah. But if it's, you know, you get a 33 on the ACT, I mean, don't run down to Toomer's freaking corner, okay?
Well, but I mean, that's, you know, maybe you got into Auburn then. But I'm saying, like, you know, if I'm just going to take this to something completely unrelated. You know, Barcelona wins the cup in Europe or whatever, some Barcelona fans run down there and throw toilet paper. That's when I'm like,
No, that's what I'm saying. Just because you're excited about something, I feel like the Auburn family needs to be excited about it. And I can, that's why I could kind of understand the Braves, because we're geographically close and a lot of Auburn fans are Braves fans. I could just kind of see that. I wasn't mad about it. I was just kind of puzzled. But I feel like it needs to involve Auburn somehow, and the Auburn family itself needs to be excited about it. When you hit those two criteria, then yeah, roll away. But if it doesn't involve Auburn and nobody but you is excited about it, then I just don't really feel like it has any, you have any purpose going down there. So
that's it. Oh. All right. Next one is from Eric at War Gas Eagle. He says, would he pundits opine that the Auburn offense clearly doesn't work with a running quarterback after this game?
Well, what we decided was the Auburn offense needs both to be able to run and pass. And you need to be good at both. With JF3, he can run like crazy, but he can't pass yet, and so it didn't work. And when Sean was out there as a quarterback and we didn't have the running game very good last year, then, yeah, it didn't work that great either. But when you've got Petway and KJ and Sean is passing well, then yeah. So it's not a matter of what can the quarterback do. It's what can the offense do.
All right. Our next question is from Spoon at the Killer McCoy. He says, so if Petway is out, do you bring in Cox back to tailback? So you have a big, more of a power punch? Use Jalen Harris, an extra lineman as the blockers at H-back?
That's an interesting thought. They like to throw the ball in the swing pass to Cox. I can kind of see Rhett going to a smorgasbord of a little bit of everything to generate offense this time. I see him being very creative in finding different ways to get the ball to different players.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if more different offensive players touch the ball in this game than in any other game this season, outside of like garbage time when the backups come in.
All right. I like that. Noah, is that in our Hoffman, says, when is the SEC going to call holding evenly across the board?
Oh, geez. We kind of. It's every game has its own set of rules.
All right. Jack Kennedy, is the real Jack K73, says, do you think, depending on how bad Cam is, this will be Kerryon's resurgence in the UGA game?
Well, we'll just have to see how his ankle is, won't we?
No, but, I mean, if, say, Kerryon was, you know, maybe this is Kerryon's game to really take over, you know, to be the man.
Well, I mean, if he's physically able to. He's been at 80% mm-hmm. ever since the week he got hurt.
Yeah. Auburn Tweep says, can you guys get that ESPN color commentator on the podcast? I want to hear more of his thoughts on the third quarter fumble.
Never.
No. Emily Rios says, was the coaching staff too confident in the game in terms of like, seems like they should have better option with sitting starters after we got a lead. Like get a lead and then bench Sean quickly instead of do it the other way.
Yeah, but like I said, if he's the backup, you have to feel like you can put him in and start him, you know. And so, I mean, I know what she means, and that's a good point. But, it's like, why have a backup if you don't trust him to back up? So,
That's fair. All right.
Every year we have a game that we have to win like this to have a good year, and this was that game. So, I was just glad we got number 7.
We appreciate that, Gus. That was nice.
Yeah, it's special.
Rusty Owen says, any thoughts on hotels in Atlanta the first week in December? Should Gus be booking rooms? Rusty, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Georgia this week.
Thank you.
Let's see.
I don't want Georgia to... I don't want that to happen, you know?
All right. Carl von Drunker says, is the JF3 talk to put to rest, and should we move him to wide receiver or the Ontario sweep running back?
I've seen a lot of talk the last day or so about what position should he be playing. And, you know, one person I saw on the Auburn mailing list had a good point. They said maybe we should go ahead and move him to like slot where he can be on the field a lot and go ahead and start grooming Woody Barrett as the backup, you know.
Well, I mean, I think that's the plan next year, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that's, you know, that's after the spring. It's too late to do that now, I think.
Right.
Dan in North Carolina says, does everyone come back ready for UGA? If not, maybe who doesn't make it? I'm really nervous about is Trey Williams. With Chubb and the big pounding running game we're getting from UGA, this is a linebacker kind of game. And the linebacker play without him and Deshaun Davis was a big step down. And so I think we really need those two guys back for this game. So I hope he's back. We know Davis will be back because that was just a stupid suspension. So I think get those two guys back, I think it'll be better.
Yeah, and TJ Neal lives.
Mm-hmm. He did. He played okay. He had a couple of missed tackles. But he got a lot of game time, so it was good for him.
Yeah.
And Nate Gilbert asked a scary question. What happens if Sean White really does get hurt? How hosed is this team?
Yeah.
Would they open it up then and let JF3 actually throw the ball? Would they try JJ again?
Yeah, I don't want to go there. We're not going to speculate on that. we're focused on Georgia. We're going to focus on Georgia.
Carter Glass says, if there was ever a year we should beat UGA at Athens, this year, right?
And I say you!
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, we should have beaten them last year in Auburn. That was a terrible Georgia team, and we had no business losing that game.
Gus, if you don't beat Georgia this year...
Blame yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. Andy Frame asked a good question. Who is the MVP of the offense and the MVP of the defense so far?
Dang. You know, we're going to have to address those questions in the Wishbone Awards in a few months. But right now, I mean, I got to think Sean White. But Petway, it's really that 1-2 punch. It's like we said a couple of weeks ago. Remember a couple of weeks ago I walked you through the whole thing where I was saying it's Sean and Petway together are like Cam. I mean, not exactly, but they're doing the things that he did. And you can't really do one without the other. If all we had was Petway and no passing, it looks like the second quarter against Vanderbilt. And if all we have is Sean and no Petway, it looks like last season. So you kind of have to have both. Don't you think?
Yeah, they're co-MVPs.
Yeah.
And defense, who would you pick?
I want to say Lawson or Montravius, but they really – I think the offenses have totally game-planned everything that they've done against us to try to neutralize those two guys as much as possible. There's been a lot of quick passes.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
so I almost want to say Holsey.
What? Holsey is the closer.
Mm-hmm.
That's his name now.
Yes, the closer.
So I think it's Adams or Lawson or both. I mean, it'd be, all right. Theodore Roosevelt says he says I called in a fine bomb show in late August and said Auburn to go 10-2, win the SEC, and go to the playoff. I think I might be psychic.
Wow.
Anyway, the question is. It seems like our pass defense is getting obliterated. We made a solid blood to Peyton Manning. Why is this happening? It seems like all teams need to do is pass on us.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about a while ago. This gets back to what I was about to say, which is, you look at Montravius and look at Carl and the other guys, and you get really excited for what our defensive front has been able to do this year. But then take that and then think about what Nick Fairley by himself did as a defensive lineman in 2010. And, I mean, they're not really to that point yet, are they?
No, but he was the best defensive lineman in the country that year. He was the right. best – that was the best season by a defensive lineman in school history, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, they're having great seasons. Just because it's not the same impact that he made every single game doesn't mean it's not great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're right, though, that the passing thing is 100% because teams are scared of our defensive line. They know they can't throw the ball deep, and running the ball doesn't work well on us, although Vanderbilt ran the ball better than they should have.
Yes.
And a lot of that had to do with the linebackers not playing well. I mean, they tackling wasn't as good, and the linebackers didn't play as well as they have. And some of that was because Trey Williams and Davis weren't in there.
Yeah.
So I think if they're both back against Georgia, I'm going to feel a lot better. But so teams are scared. I think our linebackers are much better against the run than they are against the pass. That's the other thing that's happening too. So, you know, short passes are very, very tough to stop unless you, you know, you get all up on, you know, very short zones. You're playing very tight man to man, and then you're kind of daring the team to throw it over your head. And, you know, wait. Auburn is willing to go to that kind of thing, willing to blitz and play man to man and just kind of, you know, let it hang out there, but it's dangerous. It's risky.
Yep.
But I think we're going to probably come after this young quarterback a lot more than we have. All right. We got another question. This is an interesting one from Stephen Thompson. He says, how will the current injury situation affect the game planning for Georgia? Do you think it's a very losable game with Petway injured and Sean not 100%? And he says, by the way, I'm an English Auburn fan from Northern Ireland. I've followed Auburn from Cam's time, but a really big fan when Gus became head coach entering the 2013 season. I never missed a game, sitting up all hours in the morning to catch them on BT Sport or ESPN.
Awesome. We've got several fans over there that are that way. That's really cool. Well, we kind of touched on that already. I mean, I'm very concerned about the Georgia game. I'm more interested in his background being an Auburn fan and how that all happened. I hope he'll send us in again a little more information about that because that's always fascinating to me. But, yeah, I'm very concerned about Georgia, very concerned about the injuries. And, You got anything to add to this question that I've missed that we haven't already talked about?
I think if Petway's definitely hurt, then we'll game plan based on the fact that we don't think he's going to play. Hopefully, he's going to play, and
that'd be so great. He'll
run all over Georgia. But if he's banged up, I mean, I do think it's going to be on Kerryon to shoulder the load and kind of get it done. So
yeah, is it time to take a trip?
But certainly, it is.
It is.
It is.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Well, we had quite the hijinks, didn't we, over Saturday? That was a crazy Saturday. Texas A&M. Who saw this one coming?
Mm-mm.
You saw it go up 14-0 quickly, and I'm thinking, oh, man, Mississippi State going to have their heart broken when Texas A&M cranks it up. And then you hear, oh, wait, what's his name? Their quarterback is out for the – Trevor Knight is out for the game, and you're just like, uh-oh.
And Garrett didn't play but about 10 snaps.
Man. So, just everything kind of bad happened to them, and they sure did lose, so – that was really good for us. Doesn't help our strength of schedule, but I'll take the trade-off, you know.
The schedule doesn't matter because we played both teams. I mean,
I like being able to say we lost the number two and number four teams. You know, I mean, it's pretty good, but –
sure.
But, yeah, I agree. But, I mean, they not good, Tamu.
No, great for us, though, and then
yeah.
Basically for our going forward. It's awesome.
It's like in 2000 when Mississippi State beat Arkansas, or other way around, I forget, and knocked them out of the way for us. Got us to Atlanta. Georgia Southern just about put some whammer jammer Ole Miss, took out their quarterback for the year. No more.
That was very, very disappointing to see Chad Kelly out for the year. I mean, that's tough.
It's just when it rains, it pours in Oxford this year. That's there. Florida. Whoa. I was watching this game and I had my Blu-ray movie in. I was getting ready to watch. I said, as soon as Florida starts running away, I'm going to start watching the movie. And I ended up watching almost the whole game because Florida could just never get it going. What happened?
Well, Florida is bad on offense, and the East is terrible. This is the prime example. Florida's the best team in the East by a mile. They're bad on offense, but it was also – we're seeing is we're at the point in the season when everybody on every team is banged up. And Arkansas had a bye week last week. So I think they got – they were prepared, you know, rested up. They were at home. Florida was beat up and on the road, and they couldn't handle it. But Florida's quarterback is mediocre. And Arkansas came out and played well. I hope the advantage is a big deal of the SEC.
So. Well, you know, by an aggregate score, Auburn beats Florida 87-13. 87-13, Gators. How you like that? Let's see. South Carolina went and took care of Missouri. We saw that coming. I mean, South Carolina is only a game out of first place in the East now. But, of course, the Southern is also only a game out of first place in the East. And, of course, the new Eastern power, UMass, is about a game out of first place in the East. So who isn't? You know, honk if you're not out of – honk if you're a game out of first place in the SEC East. And then LSU – oh, I'm sorry, looking ahead. Tennessee got some relief beating up on their Texter neighbors. Georgia beats Kentucky. I'm kind of glad they did because I wouldn't really want to play Georgia when they're so miserable they even just lost to freaking Kentucky, you know. That's when you got the bear wounded and bleeding and backed in the corner and you're jabbing him with a pointy stick over and over. Now he's really mad. At least now the bear gets a little bit of relaxation and is not, you know, just lashing out blindly and savagely maybe. So.
And maybe they think they're good because they went on the road and beat Kentucky in the last second field goal, and they're like, yeah, we got this.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. And then, of course, there was that soccer match that was nil-nil in the fourth quarter or whatever and late in injury time. Almost went to penalty kicks before Alabama, of course, pulled it out. If there's one thing I hate, it's sitting through an entire Alabama football game hoping that you know, with hope that they're going to lose and they win. I hate that.
I hear you.
I've wasted 3 hours. What did you think about that game?
I mean, we played LSU, and you know what their defense is like, but their defense shut down Alabama completely.
Absolutely.
I mean, Auburn had way more yards against them than Alabama did. Alabama's defense is very good. I mean, they're against the run. They're tough. There are no holes. They're no, you know. But again, I mean, LSU's played freaking Danny Etling at quarterback. He's terrible.
Yeah,
he was terrible in that game.
That was definitely the weak link between the two teams. Right?
Yeah, that was the whole difference. That was I mean, if you traded the two quarterbacks, then LSU would have won the game 10-0.
Exactly.
So. There were two or three plays where it looked like Fournette was like one guy and one kind of grabbed ankle away from going, and the whole stadium was like,
get him down, right? So,
but that was it. I mean, those ankle tackles and the fact that Etling was bad, and you know that Alabama's quarterback ran one in the end zone, and there was a play where like three Alabama guys were holding and they didn't call it, but
right,
you know, it's what it is.
I feel like if we were completely healthy, playing like we were about 2 weeks ago, Alabama, and again, we're not going to look past Georgia, but just saying, if I'd feel better about the Iron Bowl, but we'll see. Upcoming this week, of course, besides our game, Alabama plays host to Mississippi State. I can't imagine Mississippi State getting another miracle. They're
coming off the big Texas inning win. Yeah, they have positive feelings.
Yeah, we'll see.
And Alabama's beat up in a big letdown spot, I'm just saying.
That would be nice. It is a trap game for Alabama, maybe. South Carolina at Florida. You know, honestly, I have a hard time picking against Muschamp in this game.
It's the Muschamp Revenge Bowl.
Oh, South Carolina can win this game.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I'd say it, but South Carolina could win that game. I'm not making it any kind of, you know, special thing or anything, but South Carolina could win that game. Kentucky at Tennessee. You got to think Tennessee is going to be favored just because of this season and everything. But honestly, Kentucky could win this game.
No, that's a pretty even matchup. Tennessee, maybe they can try to get their season back on track. But they're kind of – remember how Texas A&M kind of melted down at the end of last year and the quarterbacks are transferring and all that crap? That's where Tennessee is right now. They're in that Texas A&M kind of dumpster fire thing. Yeah, so.
They are. The dumpsters around Neyland Stadium are aflame. It's kind of like toward the end of Return of the King when they start lighting the fires. You remember? Da 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 da. It's all around Neyland Stadium. Da 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 da. You know what's going to happen? Is Tennessee's going to be sitting there on Saturday waiting for Kentucky to come out? You know who's going to come out? Rohan. The Riders of Rohan are coming out. Oh, let's see if I have time.
Hey, Kentucky tonight. Is horse country, so.
Let's see if. Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. Let's see if I have time late tonight to put the Lord of the Rings theme in there. That the lighting of the signal fires. Then we get, John, we get to Vanderbilt at Missouri. Vanderbilt at Missouri.
My cold, dead hands.
Vandy!
Maybe you're locking up the Commodores.
Maybe my perceptions are shaded by what they did to us. But I like Vanderbilt in a big way. Double digits at Missouri. Road.
There's one fact, and that is Missouri is not good at football.
No, not this year.
Not this season.
Not this season. Barrett Salee has all kind of theories about why that is, which you can listen to his show and get them because he talks about it every week. But I'm locking up Vanderbilt there. LSU at Arkansas. You know, LSU could be emotionally down, and Arkansas is a dangerous team if you poke them with a sharp stick.
This is a bad spot for LSU coming off that loss. And the other part is Coach O's not getting the job now. It's done.
He knows it, and they know it. We know it. Arkansas knows it. And what they just did to Florida, man, the aggregate score over LSU could be as good as the aggregate score over Florida. And lastly, Ole Miss, without a quarterback, goes to Texas A&M, who is reeling. Man, this is the – I don't know what to think about this game. This is two teams that are not happy right now.
Ole Miss has – you know, one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the country, Shea Patterson, who committed to them. They were playing in a red shirt. So now there's a question, maybe they take the red shirt off and play him the last two games in the bowl game. I don't know.
Oh, and neither one of them has a quarterback. That's right. Yeah. They both lost their quarterback this week. Man, crazy. And then, of course, do you have a feeling who's going to win it? Ole Miss at Texas A&M?
It's at A&M. You got to think they'll get it together at home and, you know. Run the ball on Ole Miss.
Exactly. They run the ball some, and maybe they'll – it's hard to imagine they could lose to Mississippi State and then beat Ole Miss, but we'll see.
I mean, Ole Miss without Kelly is not nearly as scary. So.
Right, exactly. No, exactly. And the Southern Fighting this week are playing at home. They finally come off that long road stretch. The Southern Fighting are playing the Tech Ramblin'. So good luck, Southern Fighting. New team in the SEC East alongside UMass in your battle with the Tech Ramblin'. All right. I think we're about out of time and ready to get on out of here, John. Are we good to go?
We're good.
I think we need to say beat Georgia.
Beat Georgia.
Beat, 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 beat Georgia. It is time. First, you got to.
You lied to me. Oh. Release the hounds.
Right, you got to release the hounds, and then you can beat them.
I don't like Georgia. I don't like Kirby Smart.
Nope.
This is a very beatable team. Freaking true freshman quarterback, and our defense is going to eat him for lunch.
Georgia.
I must break you.
It must happen. All right, let's get on out of here for another week. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com.
and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/AUWishbone and follow the show on Twitter at AUWishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. Very good.
Hang in there.
Go to bed.